Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, best in new inventory, great pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors Guarantee, and a fabulous service department that backs it all up for the life of the vehicle. It's all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, online at sunburymotors.com. Time now for our play-by-play call of the day.
Phillies down to their last out. Down 5-0 in game four. Realmuto. Bouncing ball to third. Caught by Bregman. Throw across in time. The Astros have a World Series no-hitter.
No-hitter for the Houston Astros. As they blank the Philadelphia Phillies, this World Series is all square at two games apiece.
Intimidating crowd sound like church. Did I miss something? No. There is no carryover from one game to the next. You score seven runs one night, hit five home runs, place is going crazy. The next night, they combine and throw a no-hitter. Tonight, the Phillies could go out and score eight runs. This is no... If you think there's carryover, no. And this series has already proven that. It's already proven that. There's no carryover. Tonight, totally different game. Different pitchers, everything. You score seven one night with five home runs, you can no hit the next. You can go out and score eight the next night. It's also their last game this season at home. And keep in mind, all the Phillies need to do, and this sounds very easy, all they have to do is avoid a two-game losing streak. They avoid a two-game losing streak, they win the World Series. Time now to check in with our good friend down south in Charlotte, Reginald Walker. My friend, welcome back. Great to have you with us.
Steve Jones, always a pleasure. Always a pleasure, my friend.
So, you know, when a team gets into bounce-back mode, tell us what that's like. I mean, you had to go through that during your course, your lifetime, career, whatever. You know, what are the conversations like in the locker room?
It's frustration. It's a lot of inward reflection, a lot of, you know, the hardest part after a game like that, when you know there's so much on the line, is trying to get past the one or two or three or five, right, depending on who you are, how you look at it, plays that you feel like you may have left on the field, right? Where you may have gotten beat. You know, I'm sure there are people jumping on Sean Clifford for the pick to JPT. And there was a play on earlier in the week in a college football game. Now I'm drawing a blank of what game I was watching. Might have been the Thursday night NFL game. And there was a pick made by a defensive lineman, and I remember being around several people, and we all went, you can say whatever you want. That's just a freak play, that the defensive player made a great play. Same thing. Now, Sean's probably looking at that play a thousand ways to Sunday, trying to figure out how he threw that pick. At the end of the day, sometimes the other guy just makes a play.
When you look, how quickly can players, for the most part, process and then go to the next one? Yeah, I get it's all on an individual basis, but, you know, for the most part, as a team, how quickly can they process and then, and what does routine mean to going to the next one?
I think that's the most important part. You have to get back to your routine. You can't. One of the things that, and I've talked to a lot of coaches about this over the years. Unfortunately, at times I've been around some programs as an analyst that have lost some games in a row. Some had some losing streaks. And one of the things I talk a lot to them about is, what do you change in the process? And the first thing they say, and I say it that way purposely. And Steve, I think you know exactly where I'm going here.
Yep.
The first thing they say is, you can't change
process. That's right.
If you start to change, you've got 18 to 22-year-old kids that are going to start to question if it was a good plan to begin with. And when that starts to happen, you can lose a football team really, really fast. So sometimes, I know it sounds crazy to some people, but you have to continue the process the same way you always do, whether that's as a football player or as a loan officer or as a realtor. Like, all of those things are the same. You still have the same process. That's how you get better. That's how you work things out.
And I know we talked about this 2 weeks ago, but I'll bring it up again. The worst thing anybody can do, especially when you're in management or leadership, you don't panic. Okay? You know what you have and why you have it. So, you know, that's why you go back to work. And, you may have to make corrections, but corrections is different than changing the process.
That's exactly right. And the corrections may be anything from, you know, if we're having some issues running the football, maybe we're going to be more of a zone-based running team versus a G scheme, right? Or something like that. Or if you're going to make changes, maybe you work with a quarterback, you know, in that situation on, you know, whatever his read key might be, right? Yeah. But you don't just radically go and say, we're going to throw this offensive playbook out, or we're going to throw this defensive scheme out and come up with a completely new one. That'll get you in trouble. But you do make tweaks, absolutely.
Sure.
And maybe you change how you coach some things, okay? If we're running this route concept against this defense, well, everybody's kind of figured out we prefer to go to the number two read here because that's what's been open. Now they're taking that away. Let's look at that number three read and make that sort of the primary read now moving forward.
Penn State has played in atmospheres of a blackout at Purdue, an orange out at Auburn, a maze out at Michigan. And then, with all due respect, there's this one. When Penn State went to Indiana and you were part of the football team, what did it take for everybody to, quote, generate their own juice?
I don't know if we ever got it, right? And the funny thing about that, Steve, like, the mindset for us was, we had to treat it like Northwestern.
Yeah.
You have to treat it as if there's, you know, obviously no one there in some of those situations. And what you mainly do there is you have to make sure you start fast.
Yeah.
Because the juice will come with the fast start. So you almost want to, and everybody talks about this, how you manage emotion early and control the adrenaline and all this. No. In a game like this, you need the adrenaline early to get you through the first quarter because there's no atmosphere to pull you. And so you can allow your adrenaline, you can allow your energy to be elevated, if you will, early on because you don't have anything else to draw it from. So if it's already up high, then it kind of helps you out.
Well, I have to ask you about the situation down there because you've got an NFL team and a college team both in search of coaches at this point. So we'll start with the college team first because I know this one's a little more personal for you, obviously. Because, you know, how tough was that to see that happen?
It was hard. It was really hard because there were so many factors in it, right? Obviously, the wins and losses were an issue and a factor, but there was a lot of injuries that were a part of that factor with this football team. You had a lot of new players that were a part of that, of those factors. And then in some ways, you had, obviously closer to the end, you had a fan base that was reacting a certain way. And you saw a guy in Will Healy, who I did indeed, incidentally, had a chance to talk to earlier this week, and his spirits are pretty high. But he was a guy that was just, you know, and it was interesting listening to him in news conferences because a lot of the time he would get this question, right? Coach, what seems to be the reason why you're not able to get over the hump? And I was waiting for the day, Steve, where he flat out said, if I knew, I wouldn't be sitting here answering this question.
All right.
And he never went there.
All right.
And that's what tells me what type of person we're dealing with. Let's take away the football coach for a second. That tells me what type of person you're dealing with when they never get frustrated by the question and they never let their answers become an attack on the person asking the question, even though that was the simplest and most realistic answer. If he knew the answer to that issue, that team wouldn't have been 1-7 this year under his leadership. So that made it very, very difficult. But I think the other part of it, and this is the part that I don't think a lot of people on the outside are understanding, as you know, Charlotte is in Conference USA right now, but they're going to the American next year.
Right.
Momentum going into a new conference, and let's just face facts. The level of player, the talent level that you're going to consistently face in the American is higher than that of Conference USA.
Agreed.
So from that standpoint, the administration was also trying to look at what their momentum and what the trajectory looked like going into the new conference. Now, here's the thing that they're going to have to figure out. I read a piece right after the firing happened late last week, early this week, somewhere in that range. The average, or what Charlotte spent from a coaching standpoint this year, not to put too many people's dollars and cents out there publicly, was about $2.5 million for their staff, that mm-hmm. coaching pool.
Yep.
Well, the average in the American Conference is about $6.5 million.
Right.
So that is a major change, and I'm very curious to see where that money comes from with Charlotte. And I've done some digging and asked some questions, but I don't know that there is a check writer at Charlotte like there is in the American at places like Memphis, who has Fred Smith from FedEx, places like SMU, who have some of those folks with oil money down in Texas. I'm not sure where that kind of money is going to come from at Charlotte, so I'll be very interested to see what it looks like next.
Because Charlotte's not going to win a lot of recruiting battles in that area. There's a lot of talent down there, but Clemson's close, Georgia's close, North Carolina, NC State, Wake Forest. I mean, and not only that, you've got Penn State, Ohio State, Michigan. They're all creeping into that area if there's a player worth their salt down there. So it must be a tough recruiting landscape.
It is. I'm glad you brought that up. I'll tell you a little bit of an added piece to that. You mentioned, some different programs, including Georgia. The interesting thing about that is when Kirby Smart left Alabama and went to the University of Georgia, I talked to some people around Alabama, and one of the things I was able to ascertain in some of those conversations, Nick Saban was going to not stop, but kind of pull back a little bit in terms of the reins in recruiting in the state of Georgia, because he knew battling Kirby Smart for those kids was going to be very, very difficult. And he was going to shift more of his focus to the Charlotte area,
right?
Because he knew that there was more and more talent here, and it was increasing and improving. And so that gives you an example. And I'll tell you another thing he did that made it even more blatantly obvious. A guy that was at Charlotte just recently as an assistant coach, Joe Cox, who played high school at Independence High School, was part of that winning streak. Like, they didn't lose a game for like 7 years.
Right.
Him and Chris Leak, starting quarterback, and Joe Cox, mm-hmm. and DJ McFadden Jr., and all these different guys that won a whole bunch of games. Joe was on the staff at Charlotte. He now is on the staff at Alabama.
Yeah.
And I can tell you right now, I've seen him a couple of times in the airport here in Charlotte with Alabama gear on. Incidentally, I believe it was to recruit kids in this area. So that tells you the focus on this area. If Alabama's coming all the way in here and at times bypassing Georgia, bypassing parts of South Carolina to get here, that tells you where the talent level is.
Then there's state colleges and Penn State's Matt Rhule, obviously out, getting paid by David Tepper and Carolina. Steve Wilkes done a good job with them to this point, but how does that coaching serve? What do you think? What direction might that go in with the NFL team?
Well, I think that's the most interesting thing to see. I know I can tell you this. I've been around David Tepper. In the conversations I've had with him in the same room, same space, he seems very, very calculated and timid. But from what I understand, sometimes behind closed doors with people more involved in his business dealings, he's a lot more impulsive. My more question is, where is he going to go in terms of a coaching search? Is he looking for a big name that has done it at a high level in the NFL, i.e. a guy like Sean Payton, who is not coaching right now? They would still have to get through some contractual things to get him out of the New Orleans Saints. I'd be surprised if an interdivision team allows that. does he go after a guy like an Eric Bieniemy and give him an opportunity, or does he go with some guys that maybe don't have as big a names but could be proven commodities? Steve Wilks is certainly, as the interim right now, is certainly gaining a lot of positive momentum because of the way this team looks and how much better they are playing. Or does he look in other places to find a coach that is an up-and-comer and give them an opportunity that may not be as big a name? I think that's what's going to be interesting to watch. I think David Tepper is going to probably lean towards trying to find a big name so he can invigorate some juice into the franchise. But I think Steve Wilks, if all of a sudden they win 3 or 4 or 5 games down the stretch here, all of a sudden I think that may change. But keep your eye on somebody like a Sean Payton or somebody of that ilk with that NFL pedigree.
My friend, always a pleasure. Thanks so much. Appreciate you.
Anytime, Steve. Anytime, you know that. For you guys, I will always make my calendar open.
Appreciate it. Thanks so much, Reginald. You're the best. Reginald Walker joining us in Charlotte. Obviously with high praise there at the end for you, I thought.
Always appreciate it.
Thought that went well. I mean, it referred to as you guys. I just felt like I was part of the group, the gang at that point. See what you're doing? You're bringing it to the table every day. What do you think?
I try.
All right. We'll take a break. Today's show brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
When car repairs get difficult.
Well, I just don't know.
Me neither.
We get good. Sunbury Motors. More than quality new and used cars, Sunbury Motors specializes in complicated auto repair diagnosis. They can handle intricate repairs and even complete auto body with service open Monday through Friday, 7 till 4. And Sunbury Motors has made simple repairs easy. Maintaining your vehicle is necessary. Finding the time to do it is difficult. Welcome to Sunbury Motors Quick Lane. Open 7 till 4, Monday through Friday. Just walk in or call ahead. Relax in their remodeled waiting room with Wi-Fi, beverages, and snacks. Will Sunbury Motors factory trained techs take care of your oil change, tire alignments, brakes, and inspections. Quick Lane, 6:30 to 6, Monday through Friday, Saturday, 6:30 till 2. Sunbury Motors, Ford and Hyundai, North 4th Street, Sunbury. And Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. We take the out of auto repair.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, online at sunburymotors.com. Anytime I get to spend a few minutes with Michael Barkin, I cherish it. Michael, thank you for the few minutes you're giving us today. I know you're busy.
Steve-O, for you, man, for you, the world, baby, whatever you need. You kidding me? I'm only sorry it couldn't have been longer, for goodness sake.
I appreciate you. I appreciate you, and that's what I want to get to first. What's it like for you right now, sitting in that chair, seeing how the Phillies and how they've accomplished what they've accomplished, and seeing what the Eagles, what they've accomplished? What has it been like for you to sit in the chair and talk about each?
Well, first let me just set this up for you, that I'm sitting in the Wells Fargo Center parking lot, as I told your producer, Matt Catrillo, and there are choppers and planes flying overhead, so if it gets a little loud, I apologize, you'll understand why, but there's tailgating already. The first pitch is not until 8:03, and already there's tailgating in the vicinity of the ballpark and the Wells Fargo Center, which, of course, is where the Sixers and Flyers play. From where I sit, this is just absolute heaven. And this is why you get into the business, as I'm sure you know, and feel the exact same way. And when in April, when the season began, if you had said, hey, would you take right now, Phillies are pennant winners, they'll come within 2 games of winning a World Series, and we don't know the rest. Would you take that? Done. Absolutely, we'd take it. Yep. And that's the situation as it stands right now. You know, they took game one, and many felt they probably shouldn't have taken game one, falling behind 5-0. They win game two, they win game three, and Steve, after they won game three, this town was in a froth because they thought, myself included, we're going to win the World Series! Are you kidding me? And then last night happened, with Christian Javier, and that kid can throw a baseball, and so can his other pitching mates. And then the Phillies bats, he put them to sleep. Aaron Nola struggled, as he had his last three starts. And now we're on pins and needles, with the series having to be won, if the Phillies can actually win it, having to be won in Houston. And by the way, of their two titles, both won in Philadelphia, on Philadelphia grass. This would not be the case if they were to win this World Series. They'd have to win it in Houston, obviously. So it's been great. Yeah. It's exciting, but we don't know. We're a lot of trepidation, Steve.
Oh, and I understand that, but you know what's interesting? You and I both know this. All the sports we've been around forever. There's no carryover from game to game. You can hit five homers one night, win 7-0, get no hit the next, and then score 8 runs tonight. I mean, that's what puts everybody on pins and needles. There's no carryover.
Until and unless, or maybe I should use or, the other team is just flat out better and has yep. more depth and has more right. power and has better pitching. And that's my concern, really, is that the Phillies have been able to do it with timely hitting. They outslugged them in that 7-0 beatdown in game number 3, and that was great. But they also have had a tendency for their bats to just fall asleep and go away. And really, I thought they were in a choking situation at the end of the regular season. They were playing Washington. They lost 3 straight at Wrigley Field to a real lackluster Cubs team. And I thought, you know what? After all this, they're going to fail to make the playoffs in the worst way again. And then, boom, they put it together and they clinched in Houston. And Aaron Nola pitched a great game to clinch it. And then they end up facing the Astros in the World Series. And they're a flat-out good team. And Justin Verlander's on the mound tonight. And you can say all you want, as I have. A guy can't pitch in the World Series, but he's still probably going to win another Cy Young Award. And if all of a sudden he wakes up, their lineup is tremendous. And I don't know if the Phillies have the firepower on both sides of the ball, from the mound, the defense, and in their lineup to compete with that. So that's why I say, yeah, you can reset completely. And you probably heard Kyle Schwarber say after last night's game, when he was told about, you know, it's the first combined day, he said, I don't give a bleep. You know, I said, that's so we're in the history books. Who cares? And I like that attitude. But unless they bring it with some hits and certainly Noah Syndergaard, I don't know how long he'll go tonight. I'm thinking hopefully 4 innings, because it means he's pitching well. But then the bullpen's got a supplement. They've been really good until last night. And I don't know, I don't know if they're going to be able to do that. And I'm just trying to be objective about it. I hope they do it, but I don't know if they can.
They only had to use one of the key guys last night. That was Alvarado. The other guys you didn't have to use, because they used Robertson, they used Hand last night. So at least I feel like Robbie has all of his options really available to him tonight, depending on how long Syndergaard goes. Is that fair?
Yes, I think it is fair. He's got virtually everybody in the bullpen. I don't remember the number of pitches Alvarado threw. And I also point out, even though he had a major struggle last night, he's been brilliant in this postseason and pitched like the guy we thought he would. So Brad Hand has really struggled, and I think, if he can lock it down as he did last night, and again, it was kind of garbage time, but if he can lock it down again, I don't know if he's usable tonight. But you certainly have Sir Anthony Dominguez. You do have Robertson. And I think they have enough guys in the bullpen that will be available that they should be able to continue on. I really do.
In this atmosphere, what would it mean for the Phillies to just score first tonight to really get the spark going?
Great question. It would be huge. Regular season, they're 56-21 if they score first. And I bet you, if you went across Major League Baseball, or maybe even just playoff teams, Steve, that you would probably find that record would be similar. If you score first, you got a better chance to win. You're setting the other team back on its heels. So I think, but there's a combo there, because the Astros bat first. So you got. I think you really have to keep the Astros off the board in the top of the first. You have to get some runs on the board in the bottom of the first. And I think you really need to be the team that scores first tonight, and that winning record will apply.
great point, especially about they bat first. Michael, thanks so much. I know you've got work to do. We appreciate the time that you carved out for us today.
I got a whole half hour planned on the Eagles. Are you kidding me, Steve? No.
I know.
That's going to be a tough one. So I'm doing Phillies postgame tonight, not Eagles postgame. Both games are at the same time. Had there not been the rain out, I would have been able to do Eagles tonight, but that's such is life. One's a World Series, and one should be a beatdown against Houston at Houston. So we'll see.
It's not a bad problem to have, actually.
You're right. But thanks always for having me, my friend. Anytime.
Thank you, Michael. Michael Barkan joining us in Philadelphia, the great Michael Barkan. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We're going to have some fun, pick some games in a moment as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK. All right, King joins us. Time to pick some games, have some fun.
Here we go, King. Let's do it.
That is so awesome.
Oh, boy.
There we go. That's the scene at the sports complex in Philly right now, is what you just described. Well, it was an awesome week for Steve. He was 8-1 last week, 62-34 on the year. I went 6-3, 58-38. King went 6-3 as well, 49-44. So that's how we stand. Now we start some NFL, and we got Green Bay and Detroit, where things have not been so awesome for either team. King.
Detroit.
You know what? I like that.
Well,
I like
why
it.
Why not? Green Bay's going to have to show they can win a game before you just go pick them because of Aaron Rodgers. So, Detroit, they're at home. So,
Steve, what you got?
I'm going to take Green Bay. I just think right now Detroit has just not played well. I feel like the best game they played was against Philadelphia in the opener. No, I'm not kidding.
Yeah, you're actually right about that.
I thought Detroit played really well in the opener against Philadelphia. Yeah. I thought, boy, this could be an interesting season for them. And you know what? They haven't played well.
Well, part of the problem is they have zero, and I mean zero defense. If they had, like, even a quarter of a defense, I would be tempted to pick them in this game. But because of that, I'm going to go with Green Bay. It'll probably be an ugly game, but I'm going to go with Green Bay as well. Next one, Vegas. Jacksonville. In Jacksonville. Steve.
Well, the game's in Jacksonville?
Correct.
Does anybody in Jacksonville know it?
Good question. Very good question.
I got to give both teams credit. They're both a mess.
Yeah.
I will go with Jacksonville.
I believe in Doug P. Jacksonville's playing slightly better, so I'll go with Jacksonville at home. King.
Jacksonville, Vegas sucks.
There you go. I like it. Rolling with the Doug P's. Next, NFC West, Seattle at Arizona, also a mess. King.
Seattle. I like them.
Seattle's a lot better than I thought they would be this year.
He's doing a great job.
You talk about Geno Smith.
Geno.
But you know what? They lose their super quarterback, and they're still a tough out no matter what. I like Seattle.
Yeah, I got Seattle as well. And as I said before, Arizona is a mess. Steve.
Let's give Geno Smith credit. Big reason why he's taking care of the football. He has 13 touchdowns, only 3 interceptions this year.
He's playing great.
He's really playing really well within himself.
A lot of confidence. You know,
Cliff Kingsbury still believes the Arizona Cardinals can be one of the NFL's best offensive teams. That's enough for me to pick Seattle.
Cliff Kingsbury is starting to become the Jimbo Fisher of the NFL.
Look, to be honest with you, I couldn't stand the hire when they made it.
I agree.
Like, what?
I thought he was a fraud.
Made no sense to me.
All right, then our final one for the NFL. 425, Tampa hosting the LA Rams. We thought this would be a good matchup beginning of the season, but both these teams are also a mess, which is just very interesting. It's how the season's kind of gone this year overall. King, who you got?
It's the same deal. These games that we picked this week are all really, they're all pick'em games. I got Tampa Bay. I think Tom Brady will find a way to win this game at home. So,
Steve?
One quarterback has 9 touchdowns and 1 interception. The other quarterback has 7 touchdowns and 8 interceptions. Tampa Bay.
I'm actually going with the Rams. I think Tampa has worse offensive issues than the Rams do at this point. I think the Rams defense has a little bit better of a game than the Bucks. And I think something's up with Tom Brady. He just doesn't look the same. I know Stafford's not playing great either right now, but I'm going to go with the Rams.
His life is messed up. So, he's lost that edge.
Yeah. All right, college football now. Starting with Oregon State at Washington. Steve.
Well, that's going to be actually a good game. That game is actually tomorrow night. And Oregon State, they're both 6-2. And I'm going to lean to Oregon State on the road. I know that they'd be the underdog, but I'm going to go Oregon State.
I like the Beavers as well in this game, too. King?
I took Washington.
All right.
That's good pick. Michael Penix Jr. is a good quarterback.
Team. Yeah, they're both good teams. A great matchup.
All right, next one. We got number 20, Wake Forest, at number 21, NC State. King?
Wake Forest.
I'm going with Wake Forest as well. Steve?
Is it my understanding, is Leary out for the year now?
I don't know, actually.
Glad I asked.
I don't know who Leary is, so.
He's NC State's quarterback.
Okay. No, he's playing.
I'm going to go with Wake Forest on the road. I'll go with Sam Hartman.
There you go. Trying to look that up real quick. I haven't seen it yet. Next one, we got Bama at LSU and the Brian Kelly's. Steve.
Well, we already know what you're picking. It's going to be done out of hate.
slight hate. Yeah, I'll give you that.
That's a good reason.
It's going to be a really good game, but Alabama's a better football team. And you know what's interesting about Bryce Young? He will not win the Heisman Trophy this year, and he's having a better season this year than last year.
Totally agree. Also one of the reasons why I picked Bama, but slight Brian Kelly hate. I don't deny it. King.
Slight?
I just love quarterback. He's the best college player in the country, Bryce Young. So, Alabama, and I hope the Giants draft him, but they won't get him.
Yeah, the way they're playing, they're not going to be in that spot.
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, of all the times to start winning. Of all the times to start winning. What's wrong with my team? My team wins at the wrong times.
Oh, if they had a good quarterback, good God, you know?
I know.
I mean, the kid tries hard, but he's just not. You need a superstar quarterback. And
darn them. They finally start. They can't even get winning right.
Well, no. They've won, but they've won ugly, you know? It's not like they're blowing teams out. They're not. They've won. They're fun to watch. The defense is good. But, God, I mean, I don't know.
Defense to Saquon. That's why the Giants are winning. That's how I've always kind of characterized it. All right, now we got the Notre Dame Fighting Irish, their biggest game of the year. Big win at Cuse last week. Now they got Clemson coming to Notre Dame Stadium. Steve, do they get it done?
Oh, boy. The problem here is we all know what the problem is. And that's DJ. But I'm going to go with Clemson because of Will Shipley. Shipley is a is not just a good running back. He is an outstanding college running back. I think that's enough to offset. I think Clemson wins on the road.
King, who you got?
I think Notre Dame's rolling, and I'm going to stick with the roll.
Yeah, you had him last week. I gave you credit. And you know what? For the first time and probably only time this year, I'm going to show some confidence in my Fighting Irish. And I'm going to take them to win this football game. I just like the way they're playing right now, especially offensively. Clemson's been hanging on the ropes for the last couple of weeks. I think it finally comes back to haunt them.
Syracuse should have beat Clemson.
Exactly right. Yeah.
Clemson, by the way, I think is coming off a bye week, so I don't think that hurts them. My issue with Notre Dame is I don't know if they can score enough points to win it.
Yeah, nah, that's fair. Actually, I just have confidence in the offense for once to actually maybe be that. But, yeah, you're right. If they
trip to the Grotto will do that.
Yes. That's exactly right. Touchdown Jesus magic, man. That's what we need. All right, and finally, this is the game of the week, of course. Tennessee, who's number one in the college football ranking, which I cry foul on. But they're still a good team, of course, at UGA.
It doesn't matter. Why do you get wrapped up in that stuff?
Because I can't deal with stupid, and that's mostly the college football playoff committee. They are stupid.
It's November 3rd. It doesn't matter who number one is.
Yeah, exactly. Georgia is still a much better team than Tennessee.
Hey. It's November 3rd. Who cares who number one is? They're playing each other this week. What does it matter?
Yeah, I don't know what'll be determined, but to this point, Georgia has been the better team still. So they should be number one. It's not that hard.
Well, guess what? If they beat them, they will be.
Of course they will. But why can't we get it right this week? Like, I don't understand the logic of these people sometimes.
TV ratings.
I mean, it is just beyond stupid.
Oh, God.
That's all.
Well, don't forget Tennessee beat Alabama. I mean,
I know. And I know their offense is scoring like a bazillion points a game, 50 points a game. I get it. But Georgia's defense is like above any other, and just the overall talent still is above any other. Until they get knocked down, why are they not number one? That's all. If Tennessee wins this game, yes, let them be number one. I don't care. Just not right now. Let them win
Georgia
this game first.
Georgia won the national championship too, didn't they?
Yes, they're defending champs.
Yeah, so you're number one until you're taken
And they've beaten the snot out of everybody they played this year, practically.
Well, the list I took these picks off of, they're number one.
Yeah. So, having said that, I'm taking Georgia to win this football game. Steve.
You know how entertaining you are.
I know. I've been told that, yes. But as I've told you both, I just can't tolerate stupid.
It's November 3rd. Who cares who's ranked number one?
Just be happy, Matt. You didn't have tickets to the Phillies game last night.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it would have been historic.
Yeah, for the wrong team, for the trash canners.
Oh, my God, I would have been mad.
Yeah.
Oh.
Anyway, who you got, Steve?
I'm going to pick Georgia to win.
There you go.
If the game was at Neyland, I might have picked Tennessee, but I'm picking Georgia at home.
Fair enough. King, who you got?
I got Tennessee.
Okay.
I the only reason is I need to see Georgia how they react to a high scoring team.
Yeah,
and if they shut them down,
fair enough.
Bless them, go for it.
Yeah.
But if somebody starts scoring a lot of points on them, how are they going to react?
See, that's the issue I have with Tennessee. They're giving up 21 points a game. Now that's okay. All right, but like you look, like they had a great game against Kentucky. They gave up 6. Tennessee Martin, they gave up 24. Alabama, they gave up 49, but that was exceptional. Florida, they gave up 33 and won. All right? Georgia's only giving up 10.5 points a game. And this is where 93,000 can make a difference in terms of the crowd noise and the communication that Tennessee will have to deal with that they're not used to this point, because Tennessee has not played, has not been put in spots where they've been playing road games. I mean, they played at LSU, which is, that's tough. Death Valley's tough, and they won big. But, playing in this game, that kind of crowd noise, that's going to affect communication. It's not going to intimidate anybody, but the ability of the tackles to hear, the tight ends to hear, it does become problematic.
Well, we shall see. I'll take the Volunteers.
All right, then finally, of course, this doesn't count, but we'll do it anyway. Steve, final key to the game facing that up-tempo offense in Indiana.
Really need to see them get out of the gate.
because you had to generate your own juice. The atmosphere is not what they're used to playing in. It's a little more sedate. So you got to find and generate your own juice. I think starting fast would be a big help.
There you go. I do agree with that, and I think they will. I think Indiana's offense is just beyond repos right now, so I will take Penn State to bounce back. I wouldn't be surprised if it's in a big way, but I'll say by like two scores. I think Penn State bounces back and wins this game. King?
If they get the ball to start the second half, kick the field goal. Outside of that, Penn State.
There you go. Lock them in.
They could get the ball to start in the second half, score a touchdown.
I was so mad last week.
I'm just kidding you.
And they put Penn State played a good game, good three quarters, and then just totally, we don't need to talk about it, but you got to kick the field goal to start the second half. You can't go for it. Lose your momentum. So, whatever. Could have changed the game. Coulda, woulda, shoulda.
Houston and Philadelphia tonight. I want to tell you, everywhere I've gone today, that's all they've talked about are the Eagles and the Texans.
That's right. But you know how stupid the Texans are, too? This just shows you the disgrace of a franchise they are right now.
They speak highly of you.
Yeah, well, I can't wait to see the Eagles hopefully stomp on them tonight. They're doing a redout. Are they like blind who the baseball team's playing? They're doing a redout tonight when their baseball team's playing the Phillies. And they're going to wear their Color Rush red uniforms. Like, hello?
Is this thing on? Philly?
No, they're playing in Houston, but still.
But you have to remember, they made this decision weeks ago, okay, before they even knew they were playing the Phillies in the World Series.
Yeah, but you can
change
it.
Pretty wild, though, that they're playing each other like that.
First time since 2011.
And it turns out nobody in America is going to watch the game.
I will. No, I can't. I don't get that channel.
I'll have the Eagles on the computer, Phillies on TV, just like every other Philly fan will have tonight, probably.
Even in Philadelphia, they're going to ignore the game. They already assume it's over.
Probably.
Love the Eagles this year. Love the quarterback play.
Wait till they have to pay them.